Mark, I got a question for you.
Yep.
Magnets.
How do they work?
How do they work?
Shoot for the captive ball.
Don't you come at me with that. You knew I grew up in the Midwest. ICP, of course, is an NSYNC Clown Posse reference, is from Detroit, which I put in air quotes because they're from like outside of Detroit, which was less than an hour and a half from me. So ICP, Faygo soda is a Faygo pop, as they'd say back there. Pretty important to me.
Well, we're not going in an ICP direction today.
Oh, well, yeah.
I'm sorry. I really want to know about magnets. I mean, like the MRI machine, I know it has a magnet in it, but like, what does it do? Like,
is this a trick question?
I really legitimately don't know.
Magnets whip around a person lying down, and through the magic of magnets, we can then image a body.
Oh, okay. That clears it up.
Yeah.
Magic.
Did you just yada, yada, yada the best part?
Magic is how it works. So, I mean, that feels like high technology. When do you think they came out with that? Like, how long have we had
MRI? Do I think they came out with magnets?
MRI machines, Mark.
Oh, that's a good question. It's got to be in the 80s.
1980, in fact. Yeah, you're right. First commercial MRI machine came out in 1980. And you would think that that was the most impressive use of a magnet that year.
I guess, yeah.
You would be wrong.
Oh.
You would be wrong. In fact, that honor belongs to MagnaSave.
MagnaSave,
a feature that first came out on a pinball machine in 1980, the Black Knight.
Oh, boy.
Today, we are talking about another Black Knight-themed pinball machine that came out later. The Black Knight Sword of Rage came out in 2019. And it also features MagnaSave, which I suppose I should talk about as the most impressive use of magnets ever. It's a feature that enables you to press a button and kind of capture the pinball on the playfield and save yourself from draining out the side if you can time it right.
Now, is Black Knight the first use of Magnus? Like, they're calling it MagnaSave, right? But I can think of Theater of Magic is a pinball machine that we've played. And it saves a ball from going into the outlanes through the use of magnets.
I think Black Knight predates it. And I think that it's the first, but I don't know that for sure.
That's fair. I mean, Theater of Magic, I think it's very squarely in the 90s, and you said 1980.
1980, yeah. And I think it's probably the first to call it MagnaSave.
That's got to be copyright. Like, you don't come up with a name like MagnaSave for someone else to use it.
No.
Like, in fact, I'm pretty sure we're going to be paying someone a lot of money just for saying the words.
We can just bleep it out. It's fine. Yeah, so
that suddenly makes this discussion a lot more interesting. You think it'd be the most interesting use of
moving on. Let's talk about Black Knight Sword of Rage.
Well, maybe, I mean, Sword of Rage 2019, we're like, that's quite a ways away from 1980. Maybe you can catch me on the journey of like why, as far as I understand, Black Knight has survived the ages, right?
This is the third in the line of Black Knight pinball machines.
Yeah, can you walk me through that journey at all? Because I really don't know it.
So they were all three designed by the same guy by the name of Steve Ritchie.
Mark's brother.
And as it turns out, Steve Ritchie, the older brother, the more prolific pinball designer. And I feel like that's got to be, I don't know, very, very, very difficult dynamic to navigate as brothers, that you're both kind of at the top of your field, and yet one just has a lot more under his belt.
That's sort of the Harbaugh situation, right? In football.
Peyton and Eli Manning, you know, like,
Wow. It's every, and now of course in pinball, I should probably mention briefly, Mark Ritchie has a craw in my side just because our first episode was Fishtails. And he designed that, and he doesn't spell his name with a C, and I do, and so I've decided to have beef.
Yeah, I understand. But getting back to the Black Knight, kind of notoriously aggressive pinball, maybe is the way to put it, because one of the first games to use like voice callouts where there was sort of an antagonist character that was taunting you, talking to you, and that's kind of one of the features of the Black Knight games is that...
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Black Knight himself will kind of make fun of you if you miss a shot, will...
And they were the first to sort of, I guess, at least mainstream do it.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. It's kind of, it's at least what they're known for. And interestingly enough, the voice of the Black Knight is Steve Ritchie.
Wow.
He designs the games, and he himself makes fun of you in voice form.
Wow. Do you think that's because he, you know, they had a bunch of voice actors audition and he's just like, no, it's gotta be meaner. Or he just really, he went to an arcade one day and was like, I'm better than all these kids.
Yeah. I think that's actually how they found Steve Ritchie. He was hanging out at an arcade making fun of children playing pinball. And they said, this guy's
got talent.
He knows what's up.
Turns out
he can design them too. He's not just good at making.
This is actually an interesting point, right? So as part of this podcast, right, like I think I've been pretty upfront about I'm enthusiastic about pinball, but I am definitely a hobbyist. And so it's interesting to me, I didn't realize the Black Knight was an antagonist. Like it, for full disclosure, right? I have played the one we're talking about today, Black Knight Sword of Rage, but that's my only Black Knight experience. And I guess I thought in that I was the Black Knight fighting monsters and things, and not that he was the baddie.
Yeah, I guess I don't know the full lore, but I always kind of took it the other way, that he's like got these monsters and you're fighting them and he's making fun of you for not being able to beat them.
I mean, I believe what you're selling.
Yeah.
I'm shook. I wanted to be the Black Knight.
You're going to have to go take that poster off your wall in your bedroom and like.
Well, especially now that I know he's making fun of me.
Yeah.
That's a, wow.
not a nice guy that Black Knight.
So are there any thematic, and apologies if you were already going this way. Like, are there like thematic similarities between the 1980 version to the 2019 version that we're going to be looking at?
Well, yeah, I think the feel of the game is certainly the same in terms of the kind of punishing play style and the Black Knight kind of like making fun of you. And I think the 1980 one was one of the first to have like actual recordings of a voice, maybe not the first, but like, you know, they didn't have the same tech back then.
So. Right.
But it did. What are you thinking about?
Like, you know, in terms of play field and stuff, like, is there overlap and similarity and like, I guess what I would think of as callbacks.
So
like if someone really loved the 1980 game and then they played the 2019 version, would they say like, wow, this feels Black Knight?
I feel like I don't have a lot of experience on the early machine, so I could be wrong here. But from what I do remember, and this brings up a good point, there was an upper play field on the early 1980 machine. And it was, I think, also one of the first kind of to popularize that mechanic of having an area above the regular play field with like another set of flippers or one flipper to do some extra targets where you have to hit it up there and then hit a target.
Oh, okay.
And that sort of plays a role in our conversation today. For refresher, for modern Stern pinball machines, they come in three flavors, Pro, Premium, and Limited. And the Premium and Limited are kind of the more pricey options and the more full-featured, too. They represent the full design of the game, and the Pro is sort of, I don't want to say watered down, but a little cheaper version that lacks some of the features. And on this Black Knight machine, that is one of those features that exists in the Premium and Limited, that is to say the upper playfield, that was cut from the Pro. So we're going to be talking mostly about the Pro today that does not have that fun extra upper playfield, but feel free to, you know, toss in some little tidbits about the Premium. I know I will. So
yeah, our local sort of pinball venue has, I think, the Premium.
Yes.
Right. Which is what I have played before. So it'll be interesting to see how this one compares from what I'm going to, in air quotes, to what I'm used to.
Yeah.
Although I...
At this point, you've probably played them both about the same amount of time, right?
Right, which is to say, almost not at all. So, yeah, it'll be fine. So you think that's maybe like the thematic similarity from like the original games is that like in the full version of the design and the premium limited version, there's this idea of an upper play field.
Yeah, I want to say so. There might be some like, I don't know, maybe some of the same modes or story elements, but I don't know the...
Okay.
I don't know them well enough.
Well, give me an idea. Like what are we about to face? Like what do I want to look out for? Like where should I be? What do I want to be doing?
Well, on the play field, like all great pinball machines, there is a pretty clear target of what you're supposed to hit. There is a black knight in the middle of the play field.
You know, and now that you're saying that he's the antagonist, that makes some sense.
Yeah. So there's a big statue of a black knight in a suit of armor in the middle of the play field. And there are kind of three elements on it that you will be able to hit. One, hit the black knight directly. Kind of in the chest plate, basically. There's a target there. It's kind of a brutal shot. I feel like if you hit it directly, you're likely to just drain down the middle, so you got to kind of come at it from the side or whatever.
Great.
But then he's got a shield in his left hand that is blocking kind of a little bit of a scoop shot that you can hit it into. If you hit the shield, he'll pop up the shield, and then you can go back in. And then in his right hand, he's got a weapon, a flail, I guess is what you'd call it. It's kind of two pinballs sort of attached that spin around vertically.
What do we call this, a captive ball?
I guess sort of.
You don't feel like this is a full captive ball.
The thing is, it moves around, and like the shield, once you hit it once, it'll either pop up and let you pass and go up a ramp, or it'll start spinning around and like knock your next shot back. So he's actively kind of trying to do things to hurt you, and you got to kind of chip away at him.
Okay. Any other like? I'm looking at a picture of the playfield, and there's a giant circle in the like the bottom center. Like, are those typically those light up, right, to show you like the number of objectives before you get to like a wizard mode.
So there are different modes to play that are different monsters that you fight.
That is like,
and that's what those targets
that's
are.
That's like 14 or something, right? That is a huge number.
Yeah, I've certainly never lit up all of them. I want to say that you don't have to do every light. I think that like you have to do one of each or something. There's like multiples on there.
Okay.
I mean, but that's just my experience playing.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we'll find out when we go check it out, but that seems intimidating.
All right. Should we go fight some monsters?
Lead the way.
So we've played Black Knight, Sword of Rage, kind of gotten a feel for the table. So what do you say we kind of pick it apart?
Yeah, let's do it. Do you want to break down what our sort of usual modus operandi is?
Yeah, so we're looking at this pinball machine, trying to analyze it from three different areas, trying to figure out what we think about the game design, the theme of the machine, and then just overall how fun is it to play. And I feel like that gives us kind of a structure to think more critically about a game and really not just, you know, get lost in the playing, but actually kind of understand what's going on. So let's start with the game design. I guess I'll start. I quite like the way the playfield is laid out. I think there's a lot of fun shots on both sides of the playfield, and I think the mechanic of the knight that we talked about earlier with the flail and the shield, it's great. It makes for interesting shots, makes for challenging shots that often rebound in unexpected ways, but I think it's good.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly with the Black Knight sort of toy on the field is a fun mechanic. The shield is like the best part of that for me, which it's predominantly a ball lock. And I think maybe it's how we started modes with monsters. Yeah. But the fact that you have to hit like the little sort of side target or like the shot next to it to like get the shield to lift, you know, is sort of kind of cool. Like this, it makes for an interesting pseudo combo shot almost, you know, if you hit it right, like you just bounce off, it comes back to the flipper and then you're back in and you lock the ball and it's really satisfying. I think from a design point of view.
Yeah. I feel like I got okay at sort of hitting that shield shot from the right flipper, and it feels, I don't know. It looks to me like it should be a lot harder of a shot. And so when I hit it, I was really happy about that.
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting point, because I wonder if that's like a design consideration, like something that's actually a little bit easier to hit than it looks.
Yeah. I feel like I get the opposite a lot, where I look at a shot and I think, oh yeah, I should be able to hit that, and then it, you know, bounces off in some weird way, and it
what you mean,
and it really frustrates me. So I really appreciate that this shield shot, I think, looks a lot more challenging than it is, because I was able to hit it like fairly consistently and it felt great.
Yes, agreed, and that kind of progression felt awesome. The on the flip side, I felt like an area that I thought was really challenging compared to some of the other machines that we've seen is how lane centric this is, right? Like, it feels like every shot is in sort of a tight lane of some kind that has, you know, barriers and walls on either side, and you have to be really accurate and purposeful with your shots, which probably is very rewarding for like top tier players, but someone at my skill level that's more amateur hobbyist, I found that often frustrating, because I could regularly hit a shot in between two lanes
and then it just
comes straight back to me, or worse, it drains. Whereas some of the other machines we've seen, you know, the play field's a little bit more open, and then it kind of gradually turns into that ramp or that lane or the orbit in a way that I don't have to make up for with skill.
Yeah, I can see that. On the flip side of the really nice shield shot, there are some like very challenging shots. I think we talked about the knight himself, that straight center shot. If you ever have to hit that, like, there's a good chance it's coming straight back down the middle, because that's right in the middle of the play field. So if you don't come at it from an angle,
that happened a number of times to me in our sort of research games. I think it's probably worth calling out, like, you know, before we went to go play this one, we mentioned we've played the premium edition that has an upper play field. And I felt like playing this one, this feels like a totally different game.
Yeah. Much more so than a lot of other pro premium splits. I feel like this one feels very different.
The one thing that I think is worth noting especially is in the upper play field on a premium model, there's an extra flipper, and then there's a skill shot up there, because there's like a little scoop or something. It's like up a little ramp that locks a ball. And there is a ball lock up there that gives you what's called a catapult multi-ball, which I was pretty reliably able to hit when I've played the premium machine. And I felt the absence of that in my ability to get an easy and early multi-ball on this machine.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to judge this machine on its own merits having played the premium.
Yes.
I feel you there.
So. Yeah, so you know, I'm trying not to let it factor into the design, but it is interesting to me how of any machine we've played, whether we've talked about it or looked at it critically or not, the split on pro premium on this one is wildly different.
Yep. So I guess overall, that really did influence, I think, my opinion as well.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the war shot?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So there are some rollover targets at the top of the pinball machine that, you know, you're going to hit when you...
Which in most machines increases a multiplier.
In a lot of cases, it's a very simple kind of like you light up all the shots and you increase some sort of multiplier or bonus or something. In this case, there are these three rollover targets that spell out W-A-R, war. And if you light all of them up, it starts kind of like a whole different mode that kind of interrupts whatever other mission or whatever you were doing at that time. I hate it.
Agreed. Every other pinball machine I think we've ever played, you know, it's a reward to hit those three rollover shots.
Yeah.
Every time it happened here, I was like, oh no.
Well, and the reason I hate it is because it's this uninterruptible mode that you have to either finish or drain your ball. And I think you have to hit one of the shots you have to hit is, I think, the center.
Yeah. I think it's center, it's the shield, and I can't remember. There's a third one. It might be just all three Black Knight shots.
Yeah, I think it's all three Black Knight shots. And the flail, I believe, is like even spinning for it for part of it. And
that sounds
like,
right.
Yeah, so it's very like high risk, low reward kind of mode. So yeah, for me, if I can avoid it, I will not light up the three war lights.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's intentional.
I mean, it's an interesting challenge for sure.
A little subversion of your expectations.
Yeah. And before we give our scores, I have at least, I think, two other notes. I don't know if you have any others that you wanted to dive into on your end. I thought I was worried about this when we went into it. The monster wheel. None of my games got close to anything I would call like approaching end game wizard mode. You know, sure. Like when you accomplish all the objectives, and then you're rewarded with big points and multi balls and all sorts of fun things. So you mentioned, you know, maybe you don't have to complete the whole wheel, but that, like, as a casual player, that feels unbearable. Like, at best, I think I got 3 monsters, you know, that I dispatched in a game, and there's still like 12 lights to go.
Yeah.
Like, that's a downer of a feeling for me as a player. Like, ah,
I think that I'd have to read up. Because I'm not good enough at this machine to know how far you actually have to go, but I don't think that you actually have to do like 15 monsters.
Yeah, but that said, I do think like when you start a monster mode, like those are basically the objectives of the game, right? I think what's super cool that this machine does that others don't do is how unique the objectives feel, right? Like one of the monsters is a sandworm and it's basically ripping off Dune. And you have to hit 3 of the different lanes, but they like rotate. They like rotate around the board on like which 3 they are because the sandworm is like moving through the desert, or like the Hydra or something.
The Hydra was like you have to hit a head and then you have to hit that same head shot again to like seal the Hydra shot.
Yeah. Otherwise it comes back.
I think the modes in this game are some of my favorites. Like high points for the modes. I think I think they feel just about right in terms of difficulty and they're unique and they're fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Aside from, I guess, you know, how specific, like how accurate you must be to get into each lane. And the only other kind of critique I had we had a big conversation about MagnaSave, and it's such a cool idea, but I found it almost impractical to deploy and use during a game.
Yeah. I have never gotten it to work. I've tried a couple times, but
I used it once on a ball that was very clearly not going out the out lane. Like it was already going to be fine, but I was just like, oh, I don't know. I want the magnet.
And did it catch?
Oh yeah. I mean, the magnet works.
Sure.
But the problem is by the time that I realize it's going to drain, it's either past the magnet save or it's not going to drain, in which case why bother?
So the magnet save button is right in the center of the machine. So you got to take your hands off the flipper buttons and smash that or use your face or something.
All right, so before we go into our game, the game design scores, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
What in life would be improved by the inclusion of a MagnaSave?
Okay, no, I got one. I got one right here. I have a kind of a sectional couch that I sit on when I'm watching TV, and it's got a recliner on one of the sections, right? But it opens like a little crevice in the back of the couch that is constantly eating up keys and wallets and like my phone, and
so you feel like something's slipping out of your pocket. MagnaSave.
Yeah, the worst is I can feel when something's slipping out of my pocket, but if you're like nestled up in a couch, you don't have the reaction time. If I could MagnaSave that, it would really improve my life.
Yeah.
What about you? You got a MagnaSave for me?
I do, but it's I'm gonna cheat because it's not gonna be something magnetic. So I just want the concept of a MagnaSave in real life, and I want it like on the kitchen counter, because there have been more than one time, more times than I'd like to admit, where I see something is teetering, or like I put a bowl down and it's like not the counter correctly, and in slow motion I have to watch this thing just spill everywhere all over the kitchen.
Really, you just got to slap the MagnaSave and
slap the MagnaSave, and that thing just like slides back onto the counter.
I love it.
I'm just going to embed magnets in the bottom of all of my plates, bowls,
that's really,
pots and pants.
Really practical. Really, yeah, very practical.
I'll tell you what will be great about it. I'll just move to induction cooking and boom, I'm ready.
I think that's how that works.
I think it's it's all magnets.
Yeah.
That's induction.
Yeah. And I mean, once you've got an induction stove, you can do MRIs at home.
see what my food really looks like before I eat it.
It's all related.
So game design, for middle of the pack for me. I give it 3.
I also gave it 3. I think high praise for the modes. I love the modes, but that's probably my favorite part of the machine. I didn't like the war mode. I didn't like having to hit the Black Knight and drain down the middle.
It felt really punishing. Like when you're on and it's awesome. But if you're not, it's one of those games that feels like it's really, really going to punish someone who's not like a seasoned pinball veteran.
Oh, it is a punishing game. I felt it today for sure. Let's talk about the theme, though. I really like the theme. I think you know that I'm a fan of non-branded games that aren't based on a, you know, a movie, TV show, band, whatever. And I feel like Black Knight is – it's almost its own thing in the pinball community now because it's developed its own brand. And I like it. I like the music. I like the aesthetic. I like the kind of – I don't know, the taunting coming from the Black Knight. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I recognize, especially after our earlier conversation, that it has a sort of a rich history in pinball. But if you look at like other machines in the 1980s, or like, I don't think any of those themes were really exciting me. And I think Black Knight as a, like, if I don't have an attachment to that rich cultural history of pinball, like, it's doing nothing for me.
You don't like, I don't know, did you get to hear the music? Did you?
Yeah, the music to, I don't know, feels
like kind of over the top metal. It's great.
It feels very, I don't know, ho-hum.
I was a
fan. In theme. And I wrote here, as far as original IP goes, I think it's bland. Like, I don't know. He's the Black, like, I don't know. Maybe there's like a deep lore of the Black Knight, but like, you know, the monsters, for example, I'm going to go back to the Sandworm, a cheap ripoff of the Sandworms from Dune. Like,
I was kind of getting Tremors vibes, but yeah.
I mean, what is Tremors if not a Kevin Bacon ripoff of Dune? So I don't know, just it's something about it just does. And it's weird because I like sort of medieval imagery and theming, but this just seems so like, I don't know, if I went to the store brand section somewhere, this is like what the imagery would look like.
We have pinball at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I give it a four stars.
This is a 2 out of 5 on the theme.
For me. All right. That's fair. That's fair.
I think it's below average. And I feel like, you know, that might be an upsetting thought for some people because of, and I recognize that this is an update from the same creator of the original game. And like, there's probably a lot of love and attachment and an affection for this theme and game, but like as a theme itself, it's just not doing it for me.
Okay. That's fair. And then I guess the next bit is just the overall fun. We've covered it in the gameplay and theme primarily. Overall for me, it's fun. And I think you hit it on the head when you said, when you're hitting your shots, it's fun, but when you're not, it can be really frustrating. And that was certainly my experience, is that it more often than not can be a pretty frustrating machine, which gets in the way of,
yeah,
of having fun.
It feels like there's an overwhelming amount of things to do on this machine, and like almost to my detriment. Like I get like sort of analysis paralysis of
like playing pinball. Shot selection, you mean?
Or? Yeah, like everything, like, oh God, like there's so much. I've done 3. There's like another 12 to go. Like, and that may not be true, but like that's how that machine plays and feels.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly like you said, it's more frustrating than fun until you pop a big game, in which case then you're like, I am pinball itself.
I'll take your word for it. My score on this one was 3 out of 5. I felt like it's fun when it's fun, but it's very frustrating overall.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 3 out of 5.
All right. Well, with that then, let's cover the competition. I've alluded to it already, but I did not have my best day at pinball at the Black Knight sort of rage.
Yeah, you want to do a quick recap of how this works?
Yeah. So we're playing best of 3, kind of like to even out the noise. We pick 3 games, our last 3 games on the machine to be our score games. Mm-hmm. And whoever has the best score out of those 3 games, you know, is the champion.
That's right.
The day.
You have to buy me a beer or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. So on this one, you know, as you mentioned, this isn't my first time playing this machine. I've played it before in public in other places, and I've had better games than today, for sure. But but today, my high score was a pitiful 8.6 million.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally, I do get to say my worst score, 10 million above that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Wow, that's brutal. That is rough. And I have seen you play the premium one and just obviously, I mean, obliterate my score and get well above that. So yeah, that is a rough day.
It happens.
My best today was my first game of those 3. And I racked up over 74 million, which was really, really, and that was one of those ones I think where, again, like when it's clicking and it feels great, but you know.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think we'll have to have a rematch sometime.
For sure. Make sure to use.